To quote a guest coming up on the program this afternoon, just when you thought the relief bill negotiations couldn't get any sillier, here we are. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday today, the 9th of October. Good as always to have you along, everybody. So very much to talk about. A mere 6 minutes of live radio in which to do it, so we are going to dig right in. Lynette Lopez is at Business Insider. Sudeep Reddy is at Politico. Hey, you two.
Hey, Kai.
Hey, Kai.
So, Sudeep, I'm going to start with you. You are the mystery guest I quoted at the top of the program. Saw you this afternoon on Twitter saying, just when you thought it couldn't get any sillier, here we are. Give us, as you understand it there in Washington, the lay of the land on these negotiations.
So if you take the art of the deal, you rip it into 100 pieces, you put it in a blender, that's what this week has been. One afternoon, a few days ago, right after returning from Walter Reed Medical Center with a number of drugs in his system, the president went on Twitter during market hours and unilaterally ended the negotiations. Everybody was kind of stunned, both for why would you do this and why would you message it this way? And then he seemed to have recanted on Twitter in the following hours. And then he restarted the negotiations after Nancy Pelosi blamed it on the steroids. And then the president blamed Nancy Pelosi. And after a few more rounds of this, I won't go through it all. We ended today with the president insisting that the deal be actually bigger than what any of the Republicans or the Democrats wanted. And so Republicans who were trying to pull Nancy Pelosi down from a $3 trillion number to under $2 trillion are like, what is going on here? What is going on? And the rest of us are left thinking the same thing.
That's the title of my new podcast, What is Going On Here? Lynette Lopez, I'm obliged to point out here that the president of the United States is negotiating against himself here.
The president is acting crazier than a bag of scorpions on meth. I think the real person to watch right now is Mitch McConnell.
Yeah.
Mitch McConnell doesn't want the deal done. He says we only have time to get the Supreme Court justice through. Who knows if he's even going to be able to do that, given the state of health of his members. So there's a lot of things up in the air right now. But Mitch McConnell has never budged. He's always said, I want a skinny bill. I want to work on these, 10 issues and the rest of the economy, especially he's not interested in help to state and local governments. He's not interested in a lot of things that Democrats want to do. And so there's always been that huge gap. The president has done absolutely nothing in terms of work to try to be able to push the Republicans in a direction toward the Democrats. And after the election, especially if he loses, he will not have the power to get Mitch McConnell to do to pass another bill. So this is very concerning.
So, Sudeep, let's get actually to the timing of this thing. And let's forget about after the election, because we got 26 days or whatever that we have to get through before that.
I don't know if that's ever going to come.
What, the days after the election? Yeah, that's a whole different radio program. But Sudeep, listen, even if they pass this bill today and the president signs it tonight, it's still not going to get money in people's hands until after Election Day. Fair statement?
Yes, and you're looking at weeks for this, but the president is looking for anything he could get to claim he's pulling off a deal. He's working on trying to get $200 prescription drug discount cards going out to seniors, and they can't even get the cards out, so they're going to spend $19 million on a letter to tell them that the cards are coming. It's the same kind of thing. To be able to say, I'm delivering you checks, I'm delivering the goods, it is really, really weird that Republicans are being offered to spend more money right before an election that would help their chances, and they're turning it down. But this tells you that a lot of Senate Republicans in particular are looking past the election. They know that Donald Trump is deeply underwater. They know they're not going to be able to rescue him. They're trying to save their own political careers for what comes next. And there's a divide within the Senate of the 2/3 of people who are not running are not really interested in this, and the third who are running are very interested in this.
Lynette, for as interesting or terrifying as it is to watch all of this happen, we have to point out that this is still an economy where 850,000 people a week are losing their jobs, where 12.5 million people are on unemployment, have no jobs, and 25.5 million people are getting some kind of government assistance. This is very serious business for tens of millions of people.
Absolutely. And, you know, Mike Pence in his, you know, his debate with Kamala Harris this week said, accused the Democrats of playing politics with people's lives. This is, the Democrats have been steady. The Republicans have been steady. The person who's supposed to make them meet in the middle is the president of the United States. But the president of the United States is on drugs, making videos in front of green screens about how he's not a senior. I don't know how this is going to end up, but it doesn't seem very productive.
For the record, we're not sure it was a green screen. If you do the analysis, I think it actually proves to be real. But anyway, Sudeep, last thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. Okay. Last thing, and then we got to get out of here. I'm going to play a piece of tape from a Politico reporter. His name is Jake Sherman, very plugged in guy, who went on something of a rant this week on MSNBC about the Wall Street-Washington disconnect. Here he is. I'm going to play this, and then we're going to talk about it.
This is idiocy. These people on Wall Street should spend a day in Washington and talking to people because they are just completely out of their minds.
What do you think? I mean, he's got a point, right? Wall Street's been banking on this forever.
We are living through the most bizarre recession we've ever experienced, where the stock market is near record highs, where the signaling mechanism doesn't seem to be working. It's largely because of an assumption that Washington is going to keep delivering. That is why we have not had a true depression, and Wall Street is expecting them to expecting Washington to deliver. And the only thing that is actually going to get Washington to deliver is Wall Street panicking, and they don't want to fall into that cycle. But you know exactly what's going to have to happen for this deal to get done, and we're not going to get there.
Sudeep Reddy at Politico, Lynette Lopez from Business Insider. Thanks, you two. Have a nice weekend. All right.
Thanks, Kai.
You too, Kai.
Yeah, hang in there. On Wall Street today, speaking of which, once again, what? Me worry? We'll have the details when we do the numbers. One would imagine in the middle of a pandemic economy with millions of people out of work and the unemployment rate just shy of 8%, which is really high compared to the past couple of years, one would imagine it would be easy for companies to find people to hire right now. The National Federation of Independent Business begs to differ. A report out not too long ago found that more than a third of small businesses have open positions they have not been able to fill. Marketplace's Justin Ho looked into that one.
About 3 weeks ago, Holly Drew started looking to hire a few more workers for the pool construction company she runs in San Diego. She's still looking.
We cannot get somebody in to interview for the life of us.
Drew says she's floored.
We get hits all the time. We call, we set up interviews, and most of the time they don't show.
That usually doesn't happen in a job market like this one. Nick Bunker is research director at the Indeed Hiring Lab.
And I can genuinely use this word. It's unique. We've never seen this before. This is one of a kind.
Bunker says one unique factor is that many unemployed workers aren't actually looking for new jobs. That's because over a third of them are on temporary layoff.
Which means they've been told they have a job to return to when the business can recall them.
As a result, the labor force is shrinking. Women have been dropping out of the workforce at high rates. Labor economist Teresa Ghilarducci at the New School says there's another challenge for small companies. They often can't afford to pay workers as much as larger businesses.
And they don't have the same kinds of benefits that larger businesses do. So you find that small businesses are plagued by a lot of turnover.
Federal unemployment benefits have dried up, and the future of more government relief is unclear. Many big companies, including Disney, American Airlines, and United Airlines, are announcing new layoffs, or that temporary layoffs they announced months ago are actually permanent.
A lot of other businesses related to the travel industry are going to find that they can't promise their laid-off workers that they're going to come back anytime soon.
As a result, Ghilarducci says small businesses probably won't have trouble finding workers in a few months. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Yelp is adding a new feature, alerts on the pages of businesses where customers or employees have reported racist incidents. The company says it's taken a stand against racism, but as Marketplace's Eric Barris reports, there are some things that could go wrong here.
One thing that could go wrong has already gone wrong for Yelp in the past, says Yorgos Zervas, a professor at Boston University who studies online platforms.
When a consumer types a review, there isn't someone from Yelp looking behind their shoulder to make sure that, you know, they actually went to the restaurant, ate at the restaurant, and whatever they report on Yelp happened.
The company has had to deal with false reviews that have inflated or deflated ratings for businesses. And inaccurate reviews can have a real effect, says NYU marketing professor Scott Galloway.
There are certain actions and behavior that stick with an individual or a company, regardless of the veracity of those accusations.
Yelp says it will verify the new racism alerts by checking for news stories that support users' complaints. It's not clear how Yelp will determine whether a news story is credible. And even then, Arante Bennett, a business professor at Villanova University, says there will still be a lot of blind spots.
Places like small towns where these kinds of incidents might not make the news or get any coverage, so the Yelp team can't verify that kind of misbehavior.
Yelp says there's been an increase in posts calling out racist behavior. Arante Bennett says Yelp's racism label will have the power to change consumer behavior, but not necessarily for the better in every case.
I can easily imagine a scenario where a white supremacist sees this badge or actively seeks out this badge in order to spend money in places where they've had an evidenced history of being discriminatory.
And that, too, is something that could go wrong with Yelp's new racism label. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
Coming up.
So, yeah, my bachelorette shop girl days are over.
Settling down, if you will, as a small business owner in this economy. But first, oh, sure, why not? Let's do the numbers. Jake Sherman's right, man. I'll tell you what. Dow Industrials advanced 161 points today, 0.5%, 28,586. The NASDAQ picked up 158 points, 1.3%, 11,579. S&P 500 up 30 points, 0.8%, ended at 34.77. Good week in equities, because everything's cool, right? For the week, the Dow surged 3.2%. The NASDAQ climbed 4.5%. S&P 500 ascended 3.8%. Erica was cluing us in there a minute ago to some changes afoot at Yelp. Company shares down 1.6% today. The United Nations World Food Program is seeing a sharp increase in the number of people who are on the brink of starvation. The winner of the 2020 Nobel Peace Prize announced this morning says that number could double this year because pandemic to 265 million people. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The name International Business Machines, now just IBM, has been around for a little bit more than 100 years, which means the company is old enough to have changed with the times a few times. But it's never really strayed too far from its core business of computer hardware and software. Now, though, there are going to be fewer M's in IBM. The company is spinning off its infrastructure unit to focus on the cloud. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab has that one.
IBM started out selling tabulating machines, but knew early on it had to evolve. There's even a company song from the 1930s that talks about new fields we're sure to conquer.
Ever onward, ever onward.
Ever onward. So when punch cards became outdated, the company got into mainframe computers. And when personal computers came along, IBM expanded to software and other services. Michael Cusimano is a professor at MIT.
They've been systematically shedding businesses that become commodities.
And in tech, he says, commodities don't come with high profit margins. So IBM started dipping its toe into the cloud business. Just the toe. Jim Cortada wrote a book about the company.
IBM's history is that it does not like to be the first one to do something, because the first person to do something normally doesn't get it quite right.
About 90,000 employees will split off to continue with infrastructure services while IBM focuses on the cloud.
This will force IBM to live and die based on artificial intelligence and cloud computing.
It's a good call for IBM, says Moshe Katri at Wedbush Securities. But he also says it may not be enough.
They'll have to either make another large acquisition, or they're going to have to go on with other spin-offs of the business.
Because giants like Amazon, Microsoft, and Google already dominate that market. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Hey, what are you doing Monday morning real early? Do me a favor, would you tune into the Marketplace Morning Report, David Brancat Show, and the crew on the early shift getting you ready for your economic day. A lot of people are not doing real great right now. Health hazards, financial insecurity, social isolation, all of them leading to all kinds of mental stress. The CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, asked people about this over the summer, and they found significant increases in symptoms of anxiety and depression, of substance abuse, also suicidal thinking. A lot of companies offer free mental health services through what are known as employee assistance programs, the use of which has traditionally been pretty low. But pandemics change things, as we're learning from the Workplace Culture Desk. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more on that.
About 6 years ago, when Joseph Kozowski was working in customer support for a tech company, he started having panic attacks, only he didn't know that's what they were. He went to urgent care, where they told him he was essentially fine, but he didn't feel fine, so he stopped going to work.
And I got an email from my HR person saying, you know, we noticed you missed a few days of work in a row, and here are some resources in case you need anything.
He called his company's employee assistance program and was quickly referred to a therapist for several free sessions.
And boy, that was sure a lifeline that they threw me.
About 60% of full-time workers are eligible for this type of benefit, according to federal data, but very few of them actually use it. And the pandemic is presenting new obstacles for many workers, like Julie. She doesn't want to use her real name for the same reason she doesn't want to use her employee assistance plan.
I just don't want to open the opportunity to be seen as not able to deal with things.
She works for a national nonprofit that's seen big job cuts, so she's feeling extra vulnerable. Lisa Friedenlund with the Society for Human Resource Management says, like any therapy, what's talked about in a session is confidential. She encourages managers to normalize issues of mental health.
There's been such a stigma, but being able to talk about it and to acknowledge it is so important.
She says that is increasingly happening because so much of the trauma of the pandemic has been shared. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
We met Maris Johansson back in June. She's a first-time entrepreneur in Denver who'd opened a children's clothing and toy store in mid-May, just after Colorado lifted its restrictions on the pandemic. Mariel Segarra had gotten in touch and asked Maris to record on her phone a day in her life. And at the end of that recording, Maris had said she wasn't sure how long her business would be able to make it. But it is. She's surviving. And she'd made it to September, a big month, apparently, in kids' toys and clothing. So she recorded a second installment of her audio diary for us. Here's Mariel.
On the Tuesday morning after Labor Day, Maris Johansson and her two kids are sitting in an armchair reading a book when her four-year-old son, Logan, sees something out the window.
Snowflakes.
Oh, yeah. Starting to come down, huh?
I bet how fun it is to play in that snow.
Snow in Denver in early September. Unexpected. But Maris gets in the car and heads to her store, Broomtail, which sells children's clothes and toys, like dinosaur hand puppets.
It's 8:48, just pulled up to the back of the shop. And we'll see. I really don't know what to expect for today. You know, on one hand, I could see the weather driving people in because, you know, you go to your kids' drawers and realize that things from last winter don't fit.
Or the snow could keep people at home. So it's hard to predict. She can't help but try, though. Broomtail has been open for almost 4 months, and as of Labor Day, has yet to turn a profit. Not surprising for a new business, especially now. But in August, she was just $1,000 short, and she thinks this could be her month.
Typically, you know, I've heard that September is the biggest month for retailers and in children's apparel, even bigger than some of the holiday months.
But this is not a typical year.
So I'm going to go in here. And
inside the store, she begins her daily deep clean.
Okay, it's that time.
It was a weird, lonely summer. Her sales fell in July, and the restaurant next door shut down.
You know, the owner would stop by and bring me coffee, or we'd chit-chat about things going on in the neighborhood and business. And even if we weren't talking, you know, I could still hear them next door and hear people coming in and out. So you just felt like you weren't totally in it alone.
Until she was. On Saturday, September 12th, Maris records herself as she hops out of her car and heads into a UPS store with a package for a customer.
Hi. How are you? Just dropping this off.
She's been making a lot more of these trips lately.
No.
Her online sales are growing.
Okay, thanks. Have a good day.
This summer, she started to offer free shipping for orders over $75. She kind of felt like she had to. But it's expensive. So she's also started making her own local deliveries.
You know, if it's in Denver, I always check the route. If it's on my way home or into the shop, then I will drop it off myself.
A couple weeks later, Maris records an update.
Morning. It is Thursday, September 24th. It's just a little after 11. I've been open for an hour, and it's been pretty brisk business this morning, I would say.
She's made five sales already, online and in-store, which is wild because the past 2 days it's been dead.
So, I don't know. I think I need to stop trying to anticipate consumer behavior and just keep rolling and keep busy.
She has some big news. She just hired her first employee. Jocelyn is a commercial photographer who recently took photos of the shop. Now she'll work as a sales associate at the store for $18 an hour, two Saturdays a month, which means Maris can finally take a weekend off. A week later, on September 29th, Maris is getting the store ready for Jocelyn. She brought in some hand cream and energy bars so her new employee will feel at home.
And it's funny, I feel like it's like when you've been dating someone and, you know, you're about to move in together and you're kind of going through your house with a little bit of a different eye. And it's like, oh, in my little fridge here, I have like mustard and, you know, ham cold cuts. Like, that is really weird. So, yeah, my bachelorette shop girl days are over.
A few days later, Maris looks at her numbers and sees that, remarkably, as a new business in the midst of a pandemic, she has actually made a profit for the month of $1,200. She hasn't quite figured out why her customers shop when they do, but she'll take it. I'm Mariel Segarra for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today comes to us from the academic journal Economic Letters, a study titled, and I kid you not, Later Bedtimes Predict President Trump's Performance. The methodology went like this. They looked at the president's tweeting times, literally the times of day he has been sending out tweets, as a proxy for how much sleep he's getting and what effect that had on him the next day. So here's how it breaks down, and I'm just going to quote the paper's abstract here. The president wakes around 6 a.m., a routine which has not changed since early 2017. In contrast, they write, the frequency of Twitter activity between 11 p.m. and 2 a.m. increased 317% from less than 1 day a week in 2017 to 3 days a week in 2020. So that's the data. What's the result? Well, the researchers point out that the president's speeches and interview transcripts have already been analyzed by others for their emotional characteristics. So here's the cross-reference with late-night tweeting. On the day following a late night, they write, the president's inferred emotion is less likely to be happy and nearly three times more likely to be angry in interviews and speeches. And finally, the abstract concludes, the 2020 election odds of the president's chief opponent also increase after a late Twitter night, while the president's prospects are unchanged. Okay, we are on our way out, but here is your end-of-the-week moment of economic context. A quick follow-up to the interview I did a couple of days ago with Eva Price. She's a producer on Broadway. You might remember did the Oklahoma revival last year, has an Alanis Morissette show going, or had anyway, until things shut down. And I had asked her when we talked how she's getting ready for when theaters eventually reopen. And it turns out she's going to have a little bit more time to figure it out. The Broadway League said today it's going to stay dark until at least the end of May of next year, 2021. Okay, now we're really leaving. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you Monday, everybody. Have yourselves a good weekend, all right? This is APM.